Yes, we are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. John Wall doesn't need no introduction. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick of the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a new way to bet on things outside of sports with Kalshi. Maybe you thought on the future of TikTok. Will Congress ban it? Or won't they? Will Taylor Swift's album win Album of the Year? Will Biden's approval rating go up? Will it go down? Or inflation? You can trade futures on all of that and make money if you're correct. You're smart. You know things. Bet on it. $20 bonus if you go to Kalshi.com/stereo. Spelled K-A-L-S-H-I and deposit $50. Kalshi.com/stereo. Get in the game. There is no guarantee of performance. An investor could lose their entire investment. Investment fees. iHeartMedia does not recommend any investments. See further disclosures at Kalshi.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. Live.
You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. Down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. Down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. Down with Rappaport? Yes, I am.
You better tune in, IamRappaport.com. Cause every single podcast, you know he drops bombs. I seen him on set, a seasoned vet with true talent. Catch him on his way to CrossFit, rocking the New Balance. He asked me to do the track cause he know I rhyme elite. But I'm just waiting for the Robert De Niro line of the week. Breakfast of Champions, hosted bagel, cream cheese and lox. This is I Am Rappaport, the show never stops. You might catch him out in public, stretching his knees. But if you don't listen to the show, yo, wigger please.
Wigger please.
This is the I Am Rappaport Podcast.
All right, this is I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. Interview with Brian Windhorst, ESPN, basketball analyst, NBA analyst, commentator. He doesn't do broadcasting, but, you know, he commentates on the NBA. They call him the LeBron Whisperer. Great interview coming up. But before we get to that, I interviewed him yesterday, and then, you know, obviously what happened in Dallas last night, you know, we wanted to acknowledge it before the interview. everybody knows about what happened. It's a fucking tragedy. It's scary. It's so upsetting on so many levels. Five police officers killed at a peaceful protest for the gentleman in Louisiana and the gentleman in Minnesota, both of who were killed by cops, and then, you know, a crazed person wanted to take down cops. So you have crazy cops, and you got crazy people, and everybody has kids, and everybody is somebody's son, somebody's brother, somebody's boyfriend, somebody's husband, and now there's just loss across the board.
and I didn't feel like we could get into this interview without talking about this. Before I let you speak, Moody, you know, I was thinking, you know, in the earlier episode that we did today, today's a part of a doubleheader, you know, about this fear. You know, you were saying yesterday, you know, these people fear black people. And, you know, I was trying to think of my own history and path and feelings about that. I remember about 10, 12 years ago, Charles Barkley wrote a book, and the title of the book was Who's Afraid of a Big Black Man?
Right.
And, you know, it's like, you know, the reality of it is like, you know, I understand this fear. I'm fortunate to have been exposed to so much diversity at such a young age, but I was just thinking about, I'm trying to articulate myself, so don't take things out of context and you know, run with whatever. I'm trying to articulate myself in the most honest way to try to inspire and instigate conversation, at least, you know, for the people that are listening to the podcast, is that, you know, you think about like, oh, well, you know, white people are afraid of black people. Is it because of the way they look? Is it because of what is that? What is that? And that's not always the truth. You know, that's a general thing. But, you know, these cops are afraid of black people. White people are afraid of black people. And you know, I'm trying to think what that is. And, you know, I remember Eddie Murphy, you know, in a bit, I think it was from his first thing, he talked about, or remember his second thing, Raw. No, it was Delirious, his second thing. You talk about, you know, he was doing a bit and he was like, I went into all my crazy black shit, you know, to try to scare these white people. Like he was talking about arguing with the Italian, and I did all my black shit, and then he just laughed at me. And I was thinking about that and where that comes from, you know, and I was trying to think about, you know, where this fear and uncomfortableness around black people comes from. And I think it comes from the hostility, the frustration, the pain, and the anger that a lot of people, that a lot of black people have, and that they live with. And you could say, well, why are they angry? You know, why are black people so angry? You know, think, you know, I can't answer that, but, you know, listen, it's hard for me to say. You know, we brought up on the earlier podcast, you said, you know, how would you feel if, you know, Jewish people were getting gunned down, you know, by police all the time? How would you feel if it was your mom, your father, your brother?
You or know, just people you don't know, but they're all Jewish all right, over the country,
right,
getting cut down. It would affect you really deeply because you would say, you would look at that and say, that's not me, but that is me.
And I mean, and Moody, you could talk about this and you could get into this. I live in Manhattan on the Upper East Side. When you get in, now, G Moody has no sort of, those who've never met G Moody, G Monetti, Gerald Moody, you have no sort of you're about as frightening you're this guy. His nephew named him Fun Loving when he was a little kid. You get in the elevator in my apartment on the East Side with these white people. Sometimes, what is the reaction to you walking in the elevator?
The reaction is you see it, it's nothing said, but the eyes speak as well, you know, and that comes from, like I said earlier, the image of black men, the male, the image. Like I said, we don't control our image. We have no control over it. This image has been projected upon the world. And what is that image? It's not a wholesome, good image, right? It's in the Constitution, we're referred to as other. You see, so black people are not really angry. We just want to be left alone.
Right.
We're not the one. We're not the people that are actually killing cops. We're not doing that. We're black cops are not killing white folk. They're not doing that. So no, we're not angry. We just are tired of seeing our people cut down and nothing done. If there was justice, then people would understand. But we have a history of no justice. Nobody gets a slap on the wrist. We can go back case through case through case, 400 years. So So after a while, people get fed up. So maybe
and that's
that.
What I'm saying. That's the extreme, you know. But the anger, you know, it's like I think about it. I'm not trying to make any big, broad, preachy statements. I think about how this all started. You know, I try to think about it. Like, black people were captured like fucking dogs, like animals, brought over here. You know, stripped of everything, stripped naked, made to work, brutalized, raped, beaten, murdered, and then set free. And then it's like, we're sorry. Go figure it out now. It's never been figured out. It's never been dealt with correctly. It's never been. And to this day, some people say, that was 400 years ago. The problem has never been dealt with. Motherfuckers are still being shitted on. Motherfuckers are still being treated bad. Stereotyped, beaten.
Wait until they uncover the corruption that they find in the Baton Rouge Police Department. Wait until they uncover that. It'll be a mirror of Ferguson, a mirror of Baltimore.
Right.
All this is always smoldering underneath.
Right.
And then when a riot comes out, then people are like, why are they rioting?
Right. Why
you don't
are they
understand
so-
the racism, the corruption that's been an ongoing thing that we have to deal with. And then when it hits the breaking point, there's going to be rebellion. This is how it has happened all throughout human history.
Right.
Not just black people. People are tired of the oppression, and of course they're going to spring out.
Yep.
And then, like I said, the image of black people is always castigated in the press. We always get that. We always. And then when black people try to separate, what do? They burn down the town. They lynch the people. They kill the people. And nobody gets arrested. These wounds are just been festering for years. And it's going to happen again. And
right.
People are lied to in school about black people history. You don't get the correct history, and we get nothing. We don't get the history as well. So you're raising human beings on lie, and their self-esteem is destroyed. So what's done in the past affects the future.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like I said, I'm not trying to, we're not trying to, you know, we don't have no answer. I don't think anybody has an answer. I know that the deaths of the people of innocent black people is heartbreaking. I know the deaths, the whole thing, the murdering. Everybody's killing.
No one should be, the police should not be targeted and shot at. That should never happen. None of that shit is good, man. And we just have to come to an understanding of why there's so much hostility towards black men.
Right.
Towards black men. There's been a history of that. You have to deal with that. Although it makes the country look like shit, but you have to deal with what was done to this particular group of people and why.
All right.
You have to deal with that. And people are still getting basically lynched in the street, shot like that. Now, what if that was a Jewish person and that happened to a Jewish person? Do you know? Shit would be stopped. But for us, we're not seen as American citizens, full American citizens. We just got the right to vote in what? In the 60s?
Right.
It's not far. So they don't view us as full citizens. That's why there's two sets of laws. That's why there's never an indictment. And prosecutors will tell you, lawyers will tell you, if they want, they can indict a ham sandwich. They're not going to do it because of the victim and how the victim is viewed in American society. That's why I call them the no good judges. Richard Nixon wasn't talking bullshit when he was saying that shit, there's a war on black. This is an executive order.
Right.
This goes into policy. And if you're in a war, you got soldiers. I call the prosecutors, the judges, the no-good judges, the police officers in some cases, are the soldiers if there's a war on black people, which comes from the highest office in the land. So, yo, it's terrible, and it needs to be addressed. We're not making this shit up.
No. And the sooner people come to terms with that and start acknowledging it and start trying to deal with it and look at it.
Right. If it's an American problem, and when you see it, the pattern happening to one specific group of people, then it's the obligation of the other Americans to say, yo, man, this shit, you're just doing it to these people. This shit ain't right.
Right.
Everybody should come out, not just for no fucking dog and no fucking dolphins and shit. Your fellow black human beings are being cut down routinely.
Mr. Moody does good shit. It's the I Am Rapaport Stereo Podcast. We're getting ready to get into an interview with Brian Windhorst. Before we get to that, on a lighter note, although we have to address the seriousness, I just want to just quickly throw this at you. So Ciara, the R&B singer, and Russell Wilson, quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks, of course, they publicly mentioned they weren't having sex. They were abstaining from sex until they got married. Now they got married, and now they're telling the whole world that they're having sex and they're having a lot of sex. Yo, dude.
That guy's corny, man.
Yo,
that dude is corny.
Yo, Russell Wilson. Yo, you got to be one of the top five corniest motherfuckers ever.
Ever.
Ever. Nobody cares about whether y'all freaking off or not freaking off.
We expect you to. You're an adult.
Yeah, we don't care either way. Well, why do I know that you wasn't getting that ass? And yo, Ciara might be like, yo, this dude's fuck style is not buckwild. Like, your whole marriage is hinging on your fuck game right now. You know how much pressure you put on yourself? And what if her fuck style ain't buckwild? What if, God forbid, something don't smell right in the cookie jar? I just want to let you guys know. I don't care about what you guys are doing, one way or another. You want to abstain from sex? Cool. You want to freak off? That's cool too. None of this is my business. I don't care about any of it. You're corny. You're corny,
yeah,
Russell Wilson.
Exactly. That's it. Think about it. Any guy you was hanging out with was always talking about, oh, I be tearing this up. I'm getting this. I'm getting that. You a corny, whack dude, man. Your personal sex life with your wife is just that. Your personal life. Who cares? Unless you share it.
All right, Moody, great shit. We're going to get into this right now with B. Windy, B. Windhorst. I wanted to definitely, you know, obviously speak on this because I know it's on everybody's mind and everybody's heart. I implore everybody to have open conversation and not be scared to have open conversation. The more that you talk, the good, the bad, and the ugly, no matter how weird or uncomfortable it might be, I think the better. I think it's a tiny, tiny step in sort of just trying to understand and have compassion and understanding for each other. Cyan Rapport Stereo Podcast, and here comes B. Windy. The I Am Rapaport podcast is sponsored by Casper Mattresses. Casper Mattresses is an award-winning company that makes the most ridiculously relaxing, supportive mattresses sold directly to the consumers. Sleek, new designed beds delivered directly to your doorstep in a small box. The Casper Mattress is available in 6 sizes and had a 10-year full warranty. It's made and stitched right here in the United States of America. Free 2 to 5 day shipping in the United States and Canada. Casper is so confident in the mattress that it'll give you a 100-night free trial with the mattress. And if you're not happy, Casper will pick up the mattress for free with a full refund. Okay, it'll donate or recycle the mattress to somebody who really appreciates a great night's sleep, a great nap on a lazy afternoon. Go to Casper.com and save $50 using the promo code Rapaport. R-A-P-A-P-O-R-T. That's Casper Mattresses, C-A-S-P-E-R, Casper.com. Check it out. I sleep on one every single night and love it.
Brian Windhorst is an NBA analyst and NBA writer for ESPN. I think you, and I want to go into this, but I think you came into prominence because in the short story, I want to get the long story, is you started following, writing about LeBron James. You're from Cleveland.
Yep. Akron, Ohio.
From Akron, Ohio. From the AK?
AKC.
Now, did the AKR. Land, did this whole, I don't want to get off topic because I want to go and like make sure people know who you are. Did this little abbreviation, the land, this nickname, did that just happen this year? Because I never heard of it being called the land.
I had never heard of it before. And when LeBron announced his return, he coined the land.
Okay.
So maybe maybe I'm ignorant, and maybe it's been around for 15 years. He coined it when he came back to Cleveland.
All right, so long story short, B. Windhurst is one of the rising NBA analysts at ESPN.
The whole NBA C is rising.
Yes.
And, like, you know, LeBron is like the battleship or the aircraft carrier, and, like, Kevin Durant is an aircraft carrier. I am like a frigate, or am I like a canoe, or, like, you know, maybe a small pontoon boat.
But
it is also rising.
It is rising. The pontoon boat is rising.
I'm rising. I'm a rising pontoon boat.
All right. So let's just jump into this. You've been covering probably one of the most interesting NBA free agency off seasons or seasons ever. Definitely one of the most surprising. The second. You know, the only thing you could compare this offseason to, I mean, when LeBron left Miami, which I want to get into, that was crazy. But this collectively, I think, is crazier. What has it been like for you? I mean, and you covered the whole finals, and you're from Cleveland, and you saw this team win. What have the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks of being Brian Windhurst covering the NBA been like for you?
Yeah, well, first off, the finals, the Cleveland winning a championship was a surreal moment for me. It took me 12 hours to totally process it. I'm not a believer in going into the locker room as a media member after a team wins a championship. I've never done that before in all the finals I covered. But I did go into the Cavs locker room because there were so many people I've known from the organization for 15 years that had this was their moment that was coming to them. And then it didn't hit me until 3 days later at the parade where they had a million people in downtown Cleveland.
Wow.
It was so stupid. Instead of having a parade along a long street where the amount of people would be spread out over a course of miles, for some reason they had the parade like around a giant block where it was like four left-hand turns. And so the million people were crowded into like a square mile or
less.
Well,
it is Cleveland, so you know the planning. Just because you guys are champions now doesn't mean you know you've heightened your mentality. It is Cleveland.
I know there are Republican conventions there in a couple weeks.
Oh wow!
And let's just say let's hope they have better planning than they had for the parade. The parade was awesome.
It was awesome. You're obviously not to be able to be biased, but everybody knows you're born and raised in Cleveland. You're a Cleveland guy. You grew up in Cleveland. You've been through the wretched of all Cleveland sports. This had to be fun for you, and to you know cover LeBron the way you've covered LeBron. This had to be an exciting moment for anybody from Cleveland who loves sports.
I wanted the fans of Cleveland to experience the championship because
right.
You know I had been places. I lived in Miami when the Heat won their championships. Every year I've covered the finals for like the last 10 years and I've seen those teams celebrate and those cities celebrate. I wanted Cleveland to have that, which
right.
is why at the parade, where despite the logistical problems and despite the fact that they weren't really prepared for it and despite the fact that they couldn't figure out how to make a parade route, but they gave me a parking ticket. I thought that was a fantastic decision. Everybody was in a good mood.
Right.
And so that, to me, was the crowning achievement. And for years, people have been talking about, oh, wait till you see that parade. Wait until somebody from Cleveland wins. Wait till you see that parade. That's one of those things that people just talk about, you know, to have fun. But it was legit.
It was a legit moment.
It was a legit all-time memory moment. And also, Game 7, for a Warriors fan, had to suck.
Right.
But for the Cavs fans, like, I know people.
Were you at the game?
Yeah. I was at all the games. There are Cavs fans that I know who are rewatching Game 7 like every week.
It's like on a loop.
Yeah, it's like they're breaking it down. You know, like the I don't know. They're like doing. They're working on like they're writing their theme. Their doctorate on it. They like know every play. You know, and then they were doing that at the parade to kill time before it started. They had these big screens. And they were replaying the last 5 minutes of the game on these screens.
That's
and the fans
crazy.
Like had already memorized. They're like, here's where he goes to the left. Here's where they make that substitution. Like they're studying this fourth quarter and they're just cherishing it. So Cleveland is sucking the marrow out of this championship.
As they should.
They should.
Listen,
I think they should.
They
keep
won
doing
it. They earned it. It's been a long time for I break balls about every city pretty much except for New York. Even New York, I break balls. It smells like shit. A lot. It's still filthy. It doesn't matter how gentrified Manhattan is; it's still disgusting. People are like, you Cleveland, you Boston.
What part of New York are you from?
I'm from Manhattan. I grew up right in Manhattan.
Where in Manhattan?
On the east side of Manhattan.
Okay. Because I lived for 2 years on the Upper West Side.
Okay.
So I don't know if 2 years, like, does that, I hear people say that you're not a New Yorker. You live there for like 7 years before you're
No,
a New
you're
Yorker.
Not a New Yorker. I mean, I think in order to be a New Yorker or a Clevelander, or you have to be, I think your formative years are where they're at. But you get a sense of where you are.
Yeah, but
for two years.
I can educatedly speak about New York.
Yes. Okay. So let's talk about free agency. Let's go right into last night. Dwayne Wade. No. What happened? Did you see this coming? Walk me through in layman's terms, in dumb fucks who think they know about sports terms, what happened with Dwayne Wade?
Okay. Pat Riley just had one of the worst weeks he's had in 20 years.
Because?
Because he got played by Hassan Whiteside.
How?
Riley had this plan. He's going to go after Kevin Durant, all right? But what he wants to do is to tell Hassan Whiteside, this guy who was literally playing at the YMCA 2 years ago.
Right.
All right? But it's a great story.
Right.
Because, like, he can't get a tryout with these teams. He comes and has, like, a 1.5 great years in Miami, and now these teams are begging for him. So, but he's still kind of an unproven player. He's had 1.5 good years. All right. So he wants to chase Durant. So he wants to say to Wade and Whiteside is, guys, just hold on a minute till I talk to Durant. Let me sell Durant. Then I'm going to get Durant, and then we're going to come back, and with the money that I have left over, I'm going to take care of you, Hassan. I'm going to take care of you, Dwayne. Well, Hassan Whiteside's like, nah, man. You're going to give me my offer on July 1st at midnight, or I am walking. And he said, but by the way, I'm not saying this. I'm not extrapolating this. He gave an interview where he was like, yeah, I'm going to be making up my decision on July 1st. Problem, the Heat's meeting with Durant was July 3rd. All right, so Riley basically has a choice. He either lets Hassan Whiteside walk, which he would have done, and pitches Durant, or he's got to kowtow to this guy who literally a year and a half ago was at a YMCA.
And Hassan White's a great defensive player, athletic, DeAndre Jordan type. Same thing, cannot shoot free throws, has, you know, there's a high upside, but we still don't know. Like, DeAndre Jordan, listen, they knocked down doors last year for him.
Right.
Okay, so go ahead.
So, Riley kowtows, is like, all right, we'll meet with you July 1st, and signs him, gets his agreement July 1st.
And what did he sign for?
He signed for $98
million. $98
million
over how many years?
4 years.
Jesus Christ. Okay, now, and then Dwayne...
I mean, it's a great story for this dude.
Yes, it's a great story. He was literally not part of the NBA.
He was out of the NBA, had been cut like 4 times, had played in China, had played in like crappy leagues in Europe, got cut, was in Charlotte at the YMCA. He called him up, sent him to the D-League, whatever. So then Dwayne Wade is like, wait a minute. So not only are you telling me to sit on the runway for Kevin Durant, which... you can kind of understand, but still, you're Dwayne Wade.
Right.
You're taking care of Hassan Whiteside before me. And,
right.
And Dwayne didn't have anything against Whiteside. I mean, he made a strong play.
Right, but
he
still.
He made Pat drop to his knees, essentially, and deal with him first. So Wade's like, and not only that, Riley didn't even call him.
Didn't call Wade. Now, how does this, first of all, how does this happen? Like, what is wrong with Pat Riley? And bring me up to speed on this whole thing where, like, during the LeBron era and the Ray Allen and the Chris Bosh, Wade took pay cuts. That's a fact?
So I'll try to make this simple. So in 2010, when all those guys got together, they didn't have enough money to sign all of them at their total max dollars.
Right.
So literally the three of them got in a room. And they said, all right, you take a little bit less, you take a little bit less, and I'll take less. And Wade took the biggest cut of all.
Uh-huh.
Not only to make room for Bosh and LeBron, but also to make room for his buddy Udonis Haslem. Like,
uh-huh.
Haslem was gone. And basically, essentially, the checks that Udonis Haslem got for the next 4 years, essentially, might as well have come out of Dwayne Wade's pocket.
Wow.
I mean, they came from the Heat, but it was because Dwayne Wade... Now, what the Heat will say is... we were going to give you your money, Dwayne. You were the one that said make room for Haslem. But essentially, that's what happened. He subsidized Udonis Haslem for the Heat for 4 years. Then when LeBron walked in 2014, the Heat were devastated. They weren't expecting that to happen. Riley's greatness is unquestioned, and his greatness in 2010 when he sold LeBron. I mean, he walked into that room and he sold LeBron James on bolting from Cleveland in Cleveland. Like, if this week was one of the worst weeks of Riley's career as an executive, that week in Cleveland in 2010, he comes into Cleveland, into their home turf, infiltrates Cleveland's home turf, does the meeting. The Los Angeles Clippers is great. Los Angeles Clippers are supposed to show up at like 1 o'clock. The meeting is supposed to be, there's a meeting with the Heat at 11. The Clippers are going to be at 1. The Clippers show up at like, 12:50, and they're like, we're sorry, Mr. James is still meeting with the Heat. 1:15, 1:30. The Clippers are like, what's going on? Riley's like, no, you'll sit out there and wait. Now you're on the runway, LA Clippers.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, so he sold them in that meeting. Greatness. But now I just don't know if he has the same touch. So 2014, this is what Riley thinks he's going to do again. He's going to come in and meet with LeBron. So there's a wedding.
This is after they lost to the Spurs.
This is after they lost to the Spurs.
Dismantled them.
4-1.
Dismantling.
You know,
I had pleasure. I loved it. I loved watching it. It was a beautiful thing. Go ahead.
So Riley holds a press conference after that, and he knows LeBron's thinking about leaving. And he walks out and he slams his fist on the desk. Bam! And he goes, I'm pissed! And he starts going on this soliloquy about, you gotta have guts, you gotta want to come back. And he was like talking to LeBron. And LeBron was like, LeBron was probably already thinking of leaving anyway. Like, I'm not saying that made a difference, but LeBron was like, what are you talking about, old man?
Right.
And so a couple days later, there's a big wedding. LeBron's trainer is getting married in Coconut Grove to a Miami girl he met down there. He's a great guy. He had a baby the day before game 7 of the finals. Great guy. So Riley's going to go to the wedding, and his move is he's going to get LeBron cornered at the wedding, and they're going to, hash it out over like a drink, just like the Godfather does,
right?
At the wedding. And Riley couldn't get to LeBron at the wedding. LeBron, didn't allow a meeting at the wedding. So Riley had misjudged what he could do in 2014. So now LeBron bolts, and the Heat are like, damn. And they're about to lose Chris Bosh.
Right.
Chris Bosh is, ready to go to Houston. He's from Texas. He's ready to go to Houston. They were in big trouble, and Wade saved them. Wade takes a $10 million pay cut. This is 2014.
$10 million.
All right. So now he's left money on the table in 2010. He's left a lot of money on the table in 2014. All right, 2015, last summer, he wants a long-term deal. He's like, okay, I took care of you in 2014. Now, you give me a couple years, pay me back, we're going to be square. And they're like, we kind of want to chase Kevin Durant next year. How would you feel about taking a one-year contract? Not even like a one-year contract with an option. Like, all these guys get options just in case, he hurt his knee or anything.
Right.
He had no protection. One-year deal.
Which was this season.
Which is this season.
And how much did they pay him?
$20 million, which was good money, but he had taken $10 million less. He's still behind.
Right.
Because if he had taken the regular contract in 2014, he'd have been over $20
million. Right.
So then this year comes, and they're like, he's like, okay, I just had a really good year. I'm 34 years old. Take care of me.
He's the best player on the team.
So
when he's giving up this money here and there, it's just like there's no written deal. There's no agents. It's just like kind of agreed upon, right? There's nothing written.
We'll take care of you.
Right.
All right.
Rule number one, you got to have it written. Fuck the handshakes.
But you can't write it because you can't have a deal that's not a deal.
Right.
Like I can't say to you, I can give you a deal. Here's your 2 years, whatever million. I can't give you a deal that says, here's your 1 year deal.
I got you.
But wink, wink.
I got you.
It's got to be wink, wink. It can't be signed. So Wade's like, okay, I took care of you over and over. And they were like, wait on the runway. Mm. And that set him off.
And then he started meeting teams.
And then he's like, all right, listen, he told his agent, go tell teams I want to take bids. And that's, a bunch of little details happen you don't need to know about or concern yourself with. But essentially,
are there any good details that I want to share in this podcast?
Sure. Here's the thing. So, when they go to meet with Durant, they say, all right, we're going to offer you $26 million for this next season.
This is Miami.
Yeah. They met with him on Sunday. Today's Thursday. They go to meet with him on Sunday. They go, we're going to sign you for $26 million. And Durant's like, well, you only have $19 million of space. How are you going to get to 26? Don't worry about it. So Durant's like, all right, thank you. Next day, Durant says, all right, I'm going to Golden State. So now Wade, who's been sitting on the runway,
right,
says,
pay me.
And they go, okay, Dwayne, we're very happy to offer you 2 years and $40 million, starting with this $19 million that we have this year.
Right.
And Dwayne's like, what are you talking about? $19 million. Well, that's all we have, Dwayne. We have $19 million. He goes, you said you were going to get Durant 26. Well, how come you can't get me? He won 25.
Right.
How come you can't get me 25? And at this point, it's not even about the $6 million. I mean, no offense. $6 million is still a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, he still wanted it. It wasn't
right.
like
no,
it was inconsequential. But people were like, no, man, we got 19 for you.
And that's it.
And basically, they were saying a couple of things. One, they were saying, we don't think you'll leave. That's number one. Number two, they were saying, we don't think that you're as worth it as Kevin Durant, which is true.
At this point.
But nonetheless, the point is they had just offered Durant this money 2 days before. Whatever plan they had to get it, all right? And so Dwayne was like, nah, man, I'm out of here.
And that was it.
That was it.
Give me the three people, when I was talking to you earlier, give me three of the richest people that I've never heard of in the NBA that made good in this offseason. Before we even get to the Durant, give me three names of people that even me, big basketball mind that I am.
You are.
Never heard of, that are so rich right now this summer and that are just riding around going crazy. Give me three names.
Have you heard of John Luer?
Never heard of him. Is this guy in the NBA?
He is.
What position does he play?
He's a power forward, a stretch four.
I wouldn't know him if he came and slapped me in the face.
He's from Wisconsin. He looks like he's from Wisconsin.
God.
Very pasty white.
Yes.
Tall.
Okay, and how much did he make?
$42 million.
For how long?
4 years.
$42 million from so John Luer. Luer?
L-E-U-E-R. John Luer.
What team does this guy play for?
He plays now for the Detroit Pistons. He's a very rich man.
Okay, give me number two. You said another dude. Solomon somebody? I never heard of
Solomon Hill.
Solomon Hill plays for?
Plays for now the New Orleans Pelicans.
How much money does Solomon Hill have in his bank account coming to him?
4 years, $48 million.
4 years, $48 million. Solomon Hill, who I again, if he came up, smacked me in the face, told me some things about my mom, I still wouldn't know who he is.
Solomon Hill's a great story. So last year, he's got an option in his contract for $2 million for this year, and he's playing for the Pacers. And Larry Bird says, I'm not picking it up. You're done. You're going to be out of this league. He didn't think he was working hard enough or whatever. And Larry Bird actually said to him, and again, this is not some birdie that told me this and I'm not revealing anything. Larry Bird said this in front of microphones. I heard it. He told him, he goes, I'll see you in the D-League, kid.
Oh, about this guy.
Yeah.
Solomon
Basically,
Hill.
He was saying, you're not good enough. And not only am I not picking up your option, I'll see you in the D-League.
Right. There's something about this guy. Bird didn't like him and didn't respect him.
4 years, $48 million.
And that might be more than Larry Bird made.
No, but it's close.
It's close to what Larry Bird made his whole career.
Well, he's made a lot of money as an executive.
No, but I'm saying as an NBA player.
I could look it up, but it's close enough that it's a conversation piece.
Give me one more person who I've never heard of, me being the great big basketball mind that I am, who's made so much money in the last three or four weeks.
Have you heard of Bismack Biyombo?
Yes, Bismack, I know. Toronto.
Okay.
He made a splash during the playoffs.
Right.
He did. I didn't say it was like, you know, I didn't say he was Greg Louganis splash, but he made a splash.
Okay, because $64 million is what he got from the Orlando Magic.
You know, based on his defensive prowess, his hustle, he's a team guy, and the fact that there's so few guys that are legitimate, he's a big man's big man at this point.
Okay.
Right? He's down low, he blocked shot, he protected the rim. Right? But 64, you think that's crazy?
Yeah, well, it's what the market says. I mean, Mozgov got $64 million.
Right.
I am Rappaport. Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What's the deal with the free agency? Why did everybody like Solomon, what's his name?
Hill.
Solomon Hill, Bismack. How did their money go up? And then what happened that you wrote about in the last 24 hours where now they're pulling money back? So
okay.
So break it down in layman's terms for me.
Okay, so this year that just finished, the NBA got $900 million from the TV network.
Damn.
That's TNT, Turner, and ESPN,
wow.
ABC. So, $930 million. They negotiated that deal 8 years ago.
Okay.
Okay? 2008, 2009-ish.
Yep.
The economy was not doing as well. Just in this year alone, they're getting $2.7 billion.
The NBA?
Yes, the teams and the players. Wow. So it went from $900 million to $2.7 billion. So very simple, it tripled. So everything, so you have to look at everything, everything triples. You know, so if you were a, and it, you know, there's a whole bunch of machinations, but if you were a $6 million player 5-6 years ago, you're now an $18 million player.
Right.
Because the way the math has gone, and the thing about it is there's only 15 guys per roster.
Right.
So the money just exploded.
It's just pure economics. The league is thriving.
Hugely. It's doing extraordinarily well. During the fourth quarter of Game 7 of the finals. Okay, so in 2000, let me take it back. In 2007, when LeBron made the finals for the first time,
right.
Played the Spurs. It's a terrible series.
Right.
He got blown out 4-0.
Right.
Still, 9 million people watched on average.
Right.
Okay? 9 million people is a lot of people, but right. It's not great.
Right.
In the fourth quarter of Game 7 of the finals this year, 45 million people were watching.
Wow.
And 22 or 23 million people averaged viewership throughout your average per minute of the series. Obviously, the longer a series goes, the more people watch.
Right.
So just there's way more people interested in it.
Okay, that makes sense. And now break down to me what happened in the last 24 hours, because I read this article that you wrote. I believe it was today.
Yeah.
That now,
by the way, I'm impressed that you're really, because this is a good example. Did you care about this stuff in the NBA like 5-6 years ago?
Oh yeah, I mean, listen,
but I don't mean the league. I mean like the intrinsic little things.
Well, not so much the details and stuff like that. But I think social media, the abundance of ESPN stuff. I think for people that want to know about it, it's easier. It's getting easier and easier to understand it because of people like you that explain it in layman's terms. Because on Twitter, because you know, there's professionals, there's regular Joe Schmoes, and I think you can understand it. But I am interested in it because I'm a fan of it, you know, and I break balls, but I'm a fan of it. I love to see these guys making money, the guys who I know of and the guys who I don't know of. I'm glad to see the league doing well. So for me, it's just I'm just a fan, you know, but this free agency thing is so crazy.
But let me ask you this: 10 years ago,
no clue.
If you were talking about the Knicks, you'd be like, "Man, Courtney Lee, he's going to fit in real good." I mean,
I wouldn't have a clue. I think now because of social media and the immediacy, you could look up Courtney Lee. You could really kind of, you know, get a history into somebody that I happen to know a good amount about Courtney Lee. But you know, I think because you're able to track people easier now, I think a fan is able to be more involved even in the off season. So that's my deal with it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, honestly, and I'm just saying, it's like guys like you that are explaining it in layman's terms. I still feel like the NFL sometimes, you know, it's lacking in guys that are explaining the off the field stuff in terms that are tangible. But I think the NBA, like it's really been broken down. Like this off season, like everybody seems to be in on it. And I think that's good because fans want to know, why are these guys making money? Who are they? Why do they deserve it? And so that's
Like, over the last 10 or 15 years, fantasy sports have gotten really big. So everybody's got a fantasy team.
Right.
I know you're a big fantasy player.
I'm a fantastic fantasy football player. I've never actually
won
a league.
Have you started your preparation for fall?
Okay. As soon as the finals ended, I had to get out of my sorrows and disappointment of the Warriors losing. I had to put it all down. I did not watch you or your coverage of the parade. I've seen clips. And I started focusing on my first, second, and third round picks.
How many leagues are you in?
Well, I usually only play in one league, but because my fantasy prowess is growing and growing and growing, this year I'll probably play in three leagues. I am what you call I'm wanted in the fantasy world.
Right. Your trash talking is famous. Okay.
I'm known for it. And it's not just the trash talking, but by you bringing up trash talking first, it kind of diminishes the fantasy player that I am.
I'm so sorry.
Please.
I apologize.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I am known for my trash talking, but I am also a consummate winner.
Okay.
Okay.
You're a fantasy winner. But so here's the thing. People now, because they all have all these fantasy teams and the daily fantasy stuff, people are now obsessed with transactions.
Yes.
So people love sports transactions. And if you don't have any transactions to talk about, you talk about when the transactions are going to happen.
Right.
So here we are in the NBA in transaction season, and people love it.
Yep.
And people love how on Twitter they can get, like last night, for example, okay, Dwayne Wade's going to sign with the Bulls. Big, giant news, and perpetuates two or three other trades that happened.
Right.
And, you know, Durant leaves the, you know, the Warriors. I mean, we're still recovering.
No, OKC.
I'm sorry, OKC. Recovering from that sonic boom.
That was a sonic boom.
And now we're thinking, well, maybe they got to trade Westbrook. And like today, now, like maybe the Heat have to trade Goran Dragic.
Right.
Maybe they got a tank. So people want these transactions
right.
because they love the transactions that are in their life. So transactions have now become their own thing that mm-hmm. people want to know about. And that makes, just like you're as a fantasy football player,
yes.
you're a smarter fan.
Yes.
Because you know more about than your team.
Yes.
As a if you're obsessed with transactions in the NBA, you're going to be a smarter fan. We have smarter fans now.
I agree. And again, like, you know, I was just thinking when you were saying this, like about the KD thing, the Boston fans are invested because Captain America, AKA Tom Brady, he shows up. Danny Ainge is wearing KD's looking like a crazy person. Julian Edelman posts a shirt.
Did you like the all black look from Danny Ainge? He went with the all black.
I think that was safe. All black in the summer and okay. white jeans on Tom Brady. That was a really good thing. And the Julian Edelman, I wonder what he did with his KD jersey that he posted. Did he burn it? Did he throw it away? Did he give it to a homeless person? What did you do with your jersey, Julian Edelman? So I think it's fun. You know, these are the dog days of sports, as you
For
know.
Sure.
I mean, as much as you love talking about KD, you have to be like, okay, I got to explain. Because, you know, the last few days I've done the jump with you.
So much fun.
Did you guys talk about the KD again today somehow?
Well, of course.
Of course.
And Dwayne Wade.
And Dwayne Wade. But it's like, you know, it's also there's no football. There's no basketball. So it's sort of like there's not much going on.
There's literally no, the ESPYs are next week. They've already got at LA Live. They've already got like the tent set up for the ESPYs.
Right.
Normally, like I've been here all week. Normally, you can't move in LA Live because there's not a concert or a game. There's
hockey event. There's yeah, concerts.
There's nothing going on.
Nothing.
Like there's nothing happening in downtown
nothing.
LA this week. It's
nothing.
I've never seen it so dead.
So KD, the short and sweet, because I'm kind of over it. And it's now like, here's my 2 cents. You know, we say I feel like he's 28 years old. They came so close. I understand taking care of Russell Westbrook because I feel like he's had to sort of babysit Russell Westbrook's emotions
yeah.
and his feelings over the years. Like, if you look at the body language of, you know, when Russell Westbrook, I think he stopped doing it now, but like last season, like every time Russell Westbrook would freak out, KD would come over to him. And it's like, it's like a time bomb. You know, it's not the on the court, but it's like, is this guy going to freak out? Is he going to be mad? Is he going to start shooting? And I think part of the reason why he left, and I understand leaving, was, you know, I've had enough. I want to be my own guy. But the fact that he wants to be his own guy and that he went to Golden State to me, and I said yesterday on the jump that he cheated. What I meant was he's cheating the natural.
That got some run.
I know, but the natural. What I meant was he's cheating the natural progression
right.
of the winning and the losing cycle. Like he's cheating Mother Nature. You could helicopter to the top of the mountain the way he did by going to Golden State, or you could climb it. And you know what? You might not make. Make it to the top of the mountain. It's like, let's say I throw down right now $5 million and I go, you could take it, B. Wendy. Or I go, you know what, B. Wendy, me and you have this great business opportunity. In 2 years, we can make $6 million. Now, obviously the $5 million is great, but if we went through all the ups and downs of going in business together to make $6 million, when we get that $6 million, it's going to be more fulfilling. I feel like he's just like, I want a helicopter. I want to be on the top of that mountain right now and I can't take it. And I think the fans, now he's a more likable character and he did it more low-key, but I think the fans are going to turn on KD, and I think it's sort of been a long time coming with KD.
Well, he now has no margin for error. Before, like when he wouldn't get there, there'd be like, man, they just, you know, there's injuries or they ran into Golden State. You know,
they're young, they're figuring
yeah,
it out.
You know, they don't have a good coach. I mean, I didn't believe that, but that's what people said.
Right.
You know, Westbrook hogs the ball. They don't have a good supporting cast. He's out of excuses now, so he's got no margin for error. So,
none.
So now he's going to enter a world where the expectation he thinks he's going to a world where it's going to be easier, but the process is going to be hard. It's going to be hard for him because, like if they start the season off like 2-3, which
what if they just lose the first game?
It'll be crashing down on him. People will be on him like you know what,
right?
So but your point is well taken. It's like even though LeBron just came back to the Cavs 2 years ago, when he won that title, in a lot of ways it was a culmination of his career.
Yes.
The, you know, and that winning that championship defined his career. He felt like he had climbed the mountain.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, I agree. He climbed the mountain. He helicoptered the mountain. Or I don't want to say helicoptered, but, you know, he set
he
this.
He took a ski lift.
You know, he took lift. The ski lift to the mountain with the Miami Heatles. and I want to get into all that. But, I mean, listen, I've had enough. It's like I've had so much of KD. I'm back to wanting to talk about Deflategate. Because there's still, like, it's like KD or Deflategate. What redundant story can we talk about? It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's going to be an interesting season.
Now, the Knicks.
Yes. The Ice Bath Boys.
It could stick. I mean, I could see, look, caricatures being created.
Yes.
You know, for this. It's not good for the league for the Knicks to be bad. It's really, really bad for the league for the Knicks to be bad and the Lakers to be bad. Like, as good as this last
year... market-wise?
Just for the health of the league. Like,
right.
This last year, the Warriors were, like, one of the biggest draws we've ever seen. And the television ratings were flat because we didn't have New York, L.A., and Boston. Boston
right.
a little bit, but New York and L.A. were not there. I mean, they're yanking Laker games off television
right.
because the way ratings are so bad. So... this is not a championship team in New York.
No.
But it's going to be a relevant team. And after a couple years of missing the playoffs, I got to think as a Knicks fan, you're kind of happy about that.
I'm excited. I think that, you know, obviously these are the obvious ifs, the D-Rose if, the Noah if.
Were you excited when they traded for Rose?
I was hesitantly excited. Is that a word, hesitantly? Hesitantly? I just made up a word. We're just witnessing history.
Yeah, it's fine.
Hesitantly?
That's cool. I approve it.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, everybody has the same feelings about Derrick Rose. He's fantastic if, you know, last year he played, what, 60-something games? If. Noah, if. So, yeah, I was excited. I wasn't as excited as I would have been if they traded for Russell Westbrook or KD or you know, but you know, you still hope this. And also, as a fan, you don't want to see a guy be you know, who is so incredible for a couple of years, just have his career taken away from him the way Rose's yeah. could potentially be.
You know, he could be the answer to an incredible trivia situation. Every single NBA MVP is in the Hall of Fame.
Mm.
Like, if you win an MVP, you're wow. in the Hall of Fame. So, like,
ah.
you know, Kevin Durant's going to be in the Hall of Fame. It's fair. Steph Curry is on his way. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Steve Nash, just retired Hall of Fame.
Yes. LeBron, you think maybe they'll squeeze him
you know,
in?
No, he might second or third ballot.
Second, third ballot. Like, or like, well, like maybe not the first time you come back.
Yeah, you know, you got to earn the respect.
Right,
you can't
right.
Be
and I understand
it.
Yeah, not necessarily the first time, LeBron, but maybe you come back next year, then we'll let you in.
Yeah, and you'll be like the third person introduced, not the last, not
yeah,
first
no,
or last.
The whole thing's not going to be about you.
Of course.
Okay, it's not going to be about you.
So Derrick Rose, I mean, he's not a Hall of Famer at this point.
Because of the shortness of the career.
Terrible, terrible injuries.
Well, you know, I hope to see whether he's a Knick or not a Knick. I think everybody, if you love basketball, if you love sports, you don't want to see a guy that with that kind of greatness and that kind of potential have it stunted. So that being the case, I want to get to you. How did you wind up covering LeBron James? When is the first time you saw LeBron James play? Walk me through this career that you've had covering him and how you made it to be one of the faces of NBA broadcasting.
So, I don't know about that.
You're one of the faces, man.
Yeah, this is not a good face. We went to the same high school.
Okay.
Not the same time.
Yes.
I graduated in 1996. He graduated in 2003. So we're 7 years apart.
Yes.
In 1999... I was working at the local newspaper, the Akron Beacon Journal, and I had heard that my high school, which was not known as a basketball power at all, had gotten these four freshmen who were really, really good players who decided to all come together to go to school. So their first game of their freshman year, I went to it in a reporter capacity. I was like, I was in college and like they let me go out to these little low level high school games. You know, I wasn't covering the Cleveland Indians or the Browns, but I was able to go cover.
You were the sports guy though.
Yeah. I was a sports writer.
Okay.
As a part-time little kid.
Okay.
So I went to see him play. He was 14 years old. I know the date. It was December 3rd, 1999. First game of his high school career. Playing, you know, in a road game and against a big school, a much bigger school. And what blew me away about him, first off, he was baby-faced. Not shaving, no muscles really,
right.
Skinny, but like 6'3" with big feet.
Uh-huh.
But he didn't you know, so you see kids like that, they don't move well.
Right.
They're all elbows and knees and everything. But he moved like an adult. And you're like, wow. And so I knew the coach, who was an old college coach. You know, he was an experienced coach who'd lost his college job, and he was like trying to work his way back up. And so in other words, he was not just some high school kid. He knew what he was doing.
Right.
And he goes to me, this kid, LeBron James, is the best player I've ever worked with in my career. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's played one game. He's 14 years old. You know, I mean, he had 15 points. I mean, he didn't have like 55.
Right, right.
He's like, this kid, he will be a superstar. Like, he knew already, like from just watching him practice right. and stuff. And so I started going back and telling my bosses. So there's this kid on this St. Vincent St. Mary team. You know, we should probably really pay attention to him. Because, you know, normally, you know, we would cover like five games out of 25.
Right.
We're not covering every
game.
And
these are little paragraphs, half a page.
It was 300 words.
A little blurb.
Maybe. Yeah. So he starts playing, and they keep winning. And I told my bosses, and they thought I was looking for shine for my school, which I would never do anyway. But, I mean, my senior year, the basketball team was 3-17.
Right.
So I start following them, and I start going as many games as possible, and they're 5-0, 8-0, 12-0, 15-0. They get all the way to the state tournament. And now he's 15 years old. And they're playing this game, and it's tight in the state Final Four at Ohio State University. Now we're at the big time.
Uh-huh.
There's 15,000 people there. And this is, so it's near the end of this game, and he's in foul trouble. If he gets fouls, he gets another foul, he's out. And this turnover happens, and the guy goes to the other end, just like Andre Iguodala. Four fouls, here comes LeBron from behind, blocks the shot.
You saw this happen.
It's on video somewhere. Blocks the shot off the backboard, gets the ball, goes down to the other, again, 15 years old, playing with 18-year-old kids in the state tournament. I mean, now it feels like it'd be nothing. It'd be an afternoon for him. But this is, again, he's never done this before.
Right.
Goes down to the other end, shoots a three-pointer, and hits the three. It's a five-point change in front of 15,000 people. It's amazing.
Right.
And people are like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so then people start to notice him. So they go 27-0, win the state championship. So he gets known a little bit over the next year, and I start thinking, we could have a kid who's going to go to North Carolina or Duke.
Right.
Because in Ohio, we produce football players. We've right. always got guys in the NFL. We're a football state. We had not produced basketball players.
Right.
It's just not what we do. And so I'm like, I'm going to be covering a kid that's going to be playing at Duke.
Right.
Like, Krzyzewski is going to be showing up in these stands.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I was telling people. So he goes out as a sophomore, and they win the state championship again. And he gets named Mr. Basketball as the best player in the state. Never happened for a 16-year-old before. So he goes to this camp before his junior year. It's in between sophomore and junior year. It's like right about this time of year. The draft had just happened, and that was the draft where Eddie Curry and Kwame Brown uh-huh. and Tyson Chandler, all these high school kids get picked in the top five.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, wow, the high school kids are just going to be number one picks now. So this camp in New Jersey, it's this big camp run by Adidas. Kobe Bryant comes and addresses the kids. He's like, you know, the number two on top of the world. The Lakers have just won the title. And LeBron is going to be a junior. It's called the ABCD camp.
Right.
And every college coach in the country is there. I mean, Krzyzewski, Patino, Boeheim, you name it. They're all on one side of the gym. Then on the other side of the gym are all the NBA scouts.
Uh-huh.
Now, this wasn't normal, but now the NBA scouts realize we got to come watch these kids because they're all getting drafted. So we're talking like, you know, I don't know, Riley, you know, Mitch Kupchak, you know, all the
Grunfeld,
GMs.
They're all there.
They're all there, all right? Every, like, basketball recruiter in the country is in this gym.
Right.
LeBron just blows everybody away for, like, 4 days. And then there's this...
And who's at the camp? Carmelo, Lenny Cook?
So Lenny, the call... Well, I think Carmelo was there. But the culmination game is this kid, Lenny Cook.
Right.
All right? He is, like, everybody thinks he's going to be the number one pick the next year. And they set up the... And they're, by the way, this is at Fairleigh Dickinson University.
Right.
This isn't at the Garden.
Right.
This isn't, like, in a... It's, like, in a kind of a junky gym.
Right.
You know? And they're setting up, this is the big game, Lenny Cook versus LeBron. Lenny Cook was going to be, like, he went in the paper and was like, I could beat Kobe one-on-one right now. He was from New Jersey.
Right.
He was, like, going to be the next big thing. And they go head-to-head, and LeBron just wipes the floor with them. And he culminates by hitting a game-winning shot three-pointer at the buzzer.
Right.
Everybody in the gym walks away from that week going, this is the best basketball player in the country. Not like, oh, no, no, I like that one kid from Denver.
Right.
No, no, I like that one kid from Fort Lauderdale. No. And he was junior to be.
Right.
And they were saying, if he was a senior, he'd be the number one pick in the draft. And people, some people said maybe he should go after his junior year.
Into the NBA.
Yeah.
And this was the beginning of the national sort of LeBron James hysteria.
And we weren't in the social media age. And so the basketball recruiting media was covering it. But that was the ball that started rolling that 6 months later had him on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Okay. Now let's cut to LeBron James becomes LeBron James. I always saw you. You were. How did you wind up going from a small paper in Akron? Was it Akron?
Akron.
Tomatoes, tomatoes. Like yesterday on the jump, I said Lithuania. It was Latvia. It's tomatoes, tomatoes here, man. It's like, okay, wait, we're the same country, Akron, Akron. What do I know? Okay, so how did you wind up going from this small paper to wind up doing your job that you have now?
So I graduated college. I went to Kent State University nearby. Kent State University, who produced Julian Edelman.
Yes.
By the way, very proud of that.
Yeah, as they should be.
I just happened to be able to get a job covering the Cavs when LeBron went to them.
Right.
I would have been covering the Cavs if they got the number three pick and they had gotten Carmelo or they had gotten Darko or whatever.
Right.
So I just happened, and I already knew him. I'd known him at that point for 4 years.
And what was it like watching that ride? Like, what was LeBron like before he became this global star? Like, just a regular kid, nice kid? Was he got, cocky? Did he know?
No, man. He got bullied as a rookie. The older veterans on that team pushed him around.
How so? Who was on that team?
Ricky Davis.
Oh, yeah. He was no joke.
Yeah, Ricky Davis definitely bullied him around. I mean, I remember like his third game of his career was at a game in Portland. And, Portland was much better. Cavs were awful. They started that year like 4-15, you know. And he played really good in the first half. He had like 12 points, like 6 assists, 4 rebounds or something. And I was like, man, he might have a triple-double. I mean, I'm like, it's his third game out. And they were close. And then the second half, he didn't do anything. He was afraid to do anything. He just sort of just passed the ball and like ran away from the ball. And I was like, maybe he got tired or whatever. Turns out like at halftime, Ricky Davis told him, you're not passing me the ball enough. Pass me the ball and get out of my way. He was just bullying. And the coach, Paul Silas, sort of was like stood up for him. And they ended up trading Ricky Davis later in the year because they just had to get him away from him.
Right.
But he was like sort of in a shell.
He was.
And the second week of the season, the coach got in a fight with one of the players about playing time.
Silas?
Unbelievable stuff.
With who?
Ira Knubel.
Never heard of him either. Is he rich?
He's rich compared to me.
Yeah.
He was angry. They had just signed him, and he was angry he didn't get playing time. So it was a game in Atlanta, and he stormed into the coach's office, Silas's office, and was bitching about playing time.
Ira Knubel, I don't even know who the fuck you are, and you're arguing with Paul Silas about playing time?
He's actually a good guy. So Knubel gets into a fight with him, and Silas comes after him. And so it spills out into the hallway. And Knubel had, which was fashionable at that time, had the braids down his back.
I used to have them too. I'm kidding.
No, you look great in them.
Yeah.
And Silas, total old school guy. And he's like, get back here, you hip hop MF-er.
Uh-huh.
And like, everybody's like, oh. And,
he wanted to fight him.
Right. Silas was squared off.
Right.
Knubel was the one running.
Right.
So, that was going on. That was like week two. Like,
give me some more crazy stuff from, I love this. Give me some more stuff. So, like, you said he was getting bullied. Like, what else was going on with
it? So this one day, Silas throws Ricky Davis out of practice. They used to practice at the gym. Now they got this beautiful facility.
Right.
They used to practice at the arena. They had a little gym in the arena.
Right.
And the circus is going on.
Uh-huh.
So, like, we're in the arena, like, to cover practice, and the circus is happening in the main bowl. And Ricky Davis, the coach was so mad, he kicked Ricky Davis out of practice. So Ricky's in his practice jersey. He's out in the concourse, and he's eating a hot dog.
Uh-huh.
because he like got into a fight with the coach.
Uh-huh.
This was all like the first month,
right?
All right,
it's like just totally nuts.
Like they banned another player from traveling on a road trip.
Who was this guy?
Michael Stewart.
Okay,
Yogi Stewart.
Okay.
The other guy who's richer.
Yeah.
Very rich.
I can't remember these guys.
Yogi Stewart would be getting paid like $46
million. Yeah, $46 million
like
for 3 years.
So this was like LeBron's first year. It was a disaster.
Okay.
So like when he first came in the league, he was kind of a little bit in a shell because he was in a bad environment.
And he was, 18, 19 years old?
18 years
now,
old.
Now, what is he now? How old is he now?
31.
Now you think, I think he might be 46. Like, I think he might have, like, the, you know, like, he, when you say you saw him when he was 14, he might have been 28.
Like, there's some players who, especially who were from sort of, you know, countries that maybe don't have the best record keeping.
A year or two ahead, right?
Like, Serge Ibaka. Like
he might be 56.
He's supposedly 26, but people would, but
and this kid Thon Maker, who just got drafted by
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Yeah,
they don't know exactly how old he is.
They say he's 19, but there's data that suggests he could be as much as 23.
I am Rappaport Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's one thing to like to be like 21 and say you're 18.
Yes.
I mean, this kid, if you believe what their story is.
Right.
I'm not vowing for that.
No, I got you.
There are people who believe that when he was like 17 years old, they put him in eighth grade.
Yeah, no, I've heard
and
this
like
stuff.
He was a 17-year-old going to school with eighth grade.
Yeah, listen, he's 7'3" and he could dribble. Hopefully this kid, because he's one of these guys that's been on the internet for so long. You're
right.
Like, I hope this guy makes it into the NBA because I've heard so much about Thon Maker for so long.
He like allegedly graduated high school in Perth, Australia.
Right. There's like pictures of him, and they came here and he went back into the seventh grade.
Eighth grader next year.
Right. Now I've heard the story.
Like LeBron. I will vouch that when he was 14 years old, he looked 14. He looked like an incredibly tall and physically gifted kid.
I was this height and this, the same amount of like and this slow at 14. So I get that kind of physical specimen. All right, so walk me through this. LeBron James becomes LeBron James. You're with him, and you're now covering the NBA. He becomes this star. Talk to me about the chaos that was when he first left to go to Miami and how it affected you. Because you told me some crazy stuff, how like you were somehow associated. When he left Miami, when he left Cleveland, you were sort of like people in Cleveland they burned your jersey as well, right?
I still get treated poorly to this day in Cleveland.
It's like how, like somehow you had something to do with it?
So when I go to Cavs games, I don't watch the games from the arena.
Did they curse at you?
From the bowl.
Even though he's back?
Oh, yeah. Like at the end of game six, when the Cavs had this big, at that point was the biggest win in team history. You know, they blew the Warriors out to send it to a game seven. I wanted to get the feel, because normally in Cleveland, I watch the game in the back.
Right.
Because if I'm out there, I mean, most people are nice, but I get some, you know, some drunkards or whatever. So.
And when, is it specific? And why is it, aside from the fact you're a recognizable sports person, there's Cleveland stuff, right?
I assume so. So, like, just as an example. So, game six. The game is over. It's like 3 minutes left, essentially. I wanted to come out and hear and feel what was going on in the arena.
Right.
As these fans are celebrating this big moment. So I come out, and I'm just really standing just inside the arena, like in the tunnel area. And people start throwing bottles of water at me. And they hit me, and then I had to go back in. So, I mean, not everybody's like that. I don't want to make it seem like everybody's like that.
But
so in 2010, LeBron leaves like July 8th. I was working for the Akron Beacon Journal at the time, and I had reported on mostly good stuff for the Cavs. They had a really great 7-year run, mm-hmm. consistently getting better mm-hmm. to the finals. They had two really good teams and lost at the end. I was in Cleveland. People generally liked me.
Right.
But it was mostly because I was giving them good news
right.
for the most part. So he leaves in July, and August goes by, and I go on a big trip just like to get away because I knew it was going to be crazy. And I'm in Thailand, and I get a call from ESPN, and I do like interview with them at like seriously like 3 a.m. in Thailand, and they're going to offer me a job to go to Miami
to cover the Miami Heat.
Yeah. So because it's just a huge deal, just like there are going to be people who are going to, we already have people who live in Oakland.
Right.
There are going to be people who move to Oakland just to cover this team. It's going to be a big deal. We sort of started that.
Got you.
By bringing all these people in. And when they hired me, which by the way was a no-brainer. Not only was it,
nothing left in Cleveland. The place is the play. The burning jerseys.
The other thing is, I was working for a newspaper. Newspapers are. I'm sorry, but they're on their way out of business.
Right.
But so ESPN announced my hiring with like a press release because they were trying to draw attention to the fact that they were going to really cover LeBron heavily, and that was good. That like made a lot of positive press in the media coverage area.
Right.
But in Cleveland, it made people feel like I was going with him. And there was also this belief that somehow I worked for the team, even though I don't. So meanwhile, when I get down to Miami, LeBron was so singed by the way the Cleveland had sent him off that anybody from Cleveland he saw as an enemy, even though we'd known each other for 12 years or something at that point. He like put up a wall and like we were, it was like icy for probably 6-8 weeks
with you and him.
Yeah.
When you were around him, like, it's just like, it's not like, I want to talk to you. I want to give you the inside scoop.
He gave me like nothing for a couple of months.
Okay.
And he was like that with everybody.
I got you. I got you.
Meanwhile, people in Cleveland feel like I'm in his entourage or something like that.
And so what,
I'm getting destroyed in Cleveland for being like, you know, swinging from whatever.
Like, and you left too.
Like they think that I went down there and like I was like in the back seat when he was driving the bus. I was on his plane.
I got you.
Meanwhile, I'm down there and he's treating me like crap.
Right.
And so I'm getting it from both ends.
And what do you
like? If I was getting down there and getting all the good interviews and producing all great stuff, it's like, and I was actually like, you know, he was actually, come on in, man. You're part of me.
Yeah, screw
like,
it.
I would be like, okay, well, I did sell out then. Right. You know, I mean, but I was getting branded a sellout and I didn't sell out.
And then you told me, what was the thing you told me about? You were trying to sell your home in Cleveland. Yeah. And so they wouldn't buy your, they went out of their way not to explain this to me?
Well, we sort of hid who was selling it as much as we can. Obviously, if you went and looked it up, you could find it. And then when I bought my next house, I like put it in my wife's name first so that people can't, I mean, look, I'm not saying that somebody couldn't sleuth it out and figure out where I live.
Right.
It doesn't take the NSA.
Right.
But I just have to sort of protect myself a little bit now.
No, I got you.
And so, and then whenever I go back to Cleveland, I mean, people would shoot spitballs at me.
Jesus Christ.
And stuff like that. And like, again, I wish I was like, well, I'm doing LeBron's book and making $1.6 million on it, and that's right. I'm gonna rip all you Cleveland fans, and, you know. But I was just doing there to do a job. Now LeBron eventually got over that, and we ended up going back to a professional relationship, which was fine. But even going back to, I'm treated very well by the majority of people I deal with in Cleveland,
right?
But I still get treated like crap at certain times because even though he's back, it doesn't seem like it totally matters.
I got you. No, so one thing I'm fascinated by is the fame of sports broadcasters, because it's a certain demographic that you're going to attract. You're on TV so much, you're so recognizable. Like, I mean, what is it like going to an airport or an Applebee's or just like walking down the streets? Are you ever...
You're asking me what it's like to be famous.
No, I'm saying in terms of my kind of fame is different because people don't want me to tell them the inside scoop on every single basketball game.
Right.
Or, you know, like the sports, like I get a little bit of sports stuff, but they don't... I'm not Marv Albert. Like, I think that like you, Stephen A., people like Marv, people that are so associated heavily with sports, like the fans that they must attract, like it must just be like you could be waiting in the line at the TSA line at 4 a.m. and like always, when people see you, do they always want to talk sports nonstop?
When I'm in arenas, like when I'm in a setting where everybody in there knows the NBA, it's recognized, I get recognized a lot of the time. When I'm at restaurant, well, it does happen in Cleveland. Cleveland especially. I'm more well-known in Cleveland.
And they want to talk sport. I mean, are you ever just like, I don't want to talk about, are you like, do you ever need to take an NBA break?
Because the other thing is, one thing was like, you know, like during this final series, I didn't think the Cavs were going to win.
Right.
You know, I didn't make a prediction, But I was like, you know, the Warriors are really good. And when they got up 3-1, it was like, this is probably curtains. And so I'd run into all these people in Cleveland. They're like, are we going to do it? Are we going to win tonight? Or, you know, are they going to take the series?
Right.
I didn't want to be the party pooper and be like, no, man, they're going down.
Right.
You know, but I also didn't want to be like, hell yeah, they're going to win.
Right.
Yeah. And then these guys go on Twitter.
The next time they see you, they want to beat you up.
So I just would sort of like, oh, no, we'll see, man. I don't know. You know, I'll say something like, I wish I could tell you, but I don't know, or something like that.
Right.
So, they want me to join the party.
And that's they want a little glimmer of hope.
Yeah, that's not really my thing. My thing isn't to join their party.
I got you. Know?
I mean, that's what people want me to do. Come, we'll buy you a drink, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not really here to join your party.
I got you.
You know, I'm just kind of just want to get through this. But I'm happy that they are in. I am nothing without the people who want to. Who want to read and learn about the NBA.
Right.
If people didn't want to learn about the NBA, I would be done.
Right.
So
you wouldn't be on the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast, a worldwide phenomenon.
It is a worldwide phenomenon.
Everybody knows this.
So I'm very happy to do it. I just wish that I had earned my villainry.
I got you.
I wish I had done something to actually be a villain.
I think it's gonna grow and grow because I really think you emerged, and I think like your personality is emerging when you do your stuff. And I think
Jump Show is really fun.
The Jump Show is fun because I think the thing with me with sports and like the Jump Show and like anything that when I'm asked to do stuff with sports, it's like the analytics guys, they could do the analytics all day, but at a certain point, it's like I don't want to sit there and watch a guy in a suit. Sit there and break down a bat. I'm at home in a pair of boxer shorts, probably picking my nose in one hand, drinking a Snapple or a beer or whatever drink you're in the other hand. Like, you're watching the game. So, like, to watch the ESPN guys, and it's so, like, some of these guys are so nerded out. They take the sense of humor and the fun and the passion out of it. It's like, I got your analytics. I got your stats. Ooh, you're so smart. You created a new stat within a stat. Whoop-dee-fucking-do. It's like, I care about this fucking team winning. I like this guy. I don't like this guy. The agony of defeat, the thrill of victory, that's what I'm into. You know what I mean? But I think the thing with the Jump that I like doing is they get away from that. There is I think that there's a good balance of analytics, it's fun, and I just think it's more lighthearted. But some of this nerd, it's too statted out, man. Even for people that I like, it becomes like watching a ticker the stock market ticker. It's too much.
Well, the players, I feel like the players are enjoying it.
So the stats.
We're getting the Jump.
Yes,
there's, players are enjoying it. They're coming on to it. They like to come on the show.
Yes.
They're having fun with it.
It's fun.
That's good. I think like you could be. Like a Charles Barkley light.
Huh. I appreciate
that. I feel like this could be a new phase of your career because you know enough about the NBA.
Yes.
That you can talk about it educatedly.
Yes.
But you also have like a fan's naivete about
it
that makes it more enjoyable to watch. That they feel like they're comparable to you.
Right.
They know everything. They know about the league, but they don't know everything.
Right.
And you obviously a performer. You can deliver in such a way. I think, I don't know what movies and acting jobs you got lined up, but I think basketball commentary, I think there's a niche for you.
Well, I appreciate
with
that.
This growing, there's more demand for it. People want it.
I love doing it. I'm such a fan. I mean, I'm a humongous basketball fan. I grew up I literally wanted to play in the NBA. So, and I've always loved it. I love the sports. I love the drama of it. I love the soap opera aspect. I just love the whole thing. More than, NFL is behind it. It is second, but there's nothing, I'm always going to have this love affair with the NBA. Your whole thing with basketball, like, did you love basketball growing up? Did you play ball? Like,
I did.
Like,
obviously, I'm not built to be a basketball player. I played basketball as a kid.
Did you love it?
I was a seasonal kid. I played baseball in the spring and summer, golf. I was mostly a golfer. I played on the high school team in golf. And I played basketball in grade school.
Okay.
I loved going to basketball games. I love the way it, like the arc of a game.
Yes.
Like I like being enraptured and like you can feel one team making a run. You can feel the tension of the game building.
Yes.
I like the game I can't stand baseball.
Me neither.
I mean,
I know nothing. I can name two or three baseball players that are in the major leagues now. I know nothing. I could care less. I don't see how people sit there for 4 hours on a 1 p.m. in the sun, basking, getting fried by the sun, and sit there and watch nothing happen. I don't even know how that's still a business.
I mean, my wife is a big baseball fan. She loves the Cleveland Indians.
So, does she drag you to games?
I agree to go to one a year.
Ugh.
One a year.
In the sun or in the nighttime? I'm never going back to a game during the day.
You're speaking like somebody who's fair-haired,
I mean,
you know?
Look at me, man. I mean, I should be a spokesperson for a sun. I don't know how I don't have a sunblock sponsor on the Iron Rapport Stereo
Podcast. No kidding. That'd be great.
I sleep with sunblock on. When I go to bed, I put on... I mean, I'm so not into the sun. You're not, you know, you're not winning any bronze contests either.
First off, I went to Aruba when I was like about 10, 12 years ago. And like, I just was in the sun for like 20 minutes or something. Got the worst sunburn of my life. My shoulders are still not recovered from it. Like the skin on my shoulder. I probably get skin cancer.
Yeah.
It affected me so much that I like lived in Miami for a few years and I was like under hats.
Me too.
I'll never be tan. But I love college football.
Okay.
And I feel bad about
it. You know college football?
I do.
Do you know it like as well as the NBA?
No. I'm not like an analyst or anything.
Right.
But I feel bad about it because those kids are being exploited.
Oh, completely.
I'm complicit. I'm complicit.
Right.
The concussions are awful.
Right.
These dudes are like going crazy. Like by the day, we're seeing guys get diagnosed with CTE.
Right.
I got to try to wean myself off of it. I don't know if
you feel guilty watching it?
I do.
Really?
I do. I feel.
What about NFL?
I'm not as into that as much. I can like if there's nothing going on a Sunday, I'll watch. I don't need the NFL, which is, you know, not good for, you know, the ESPN is.
No, I got you. I got you.
But college football,
I
love.
You got to pace yourself. You're when are you taking like you haven't had a break since the season. Like, what's the rest of your summer like until what is the rest of your break like?
Well, first off, I try to de-plug whenever I can. Like when I leave here and I'm going back to the hotel, I will listen to The Stern Show, which is, they're on hiatus. One of the reasons why I'm a big fan of yours, because your performance is on there. He doesn't know anything.
Nothing.
About it. I can listen to that show. I listened to every Howard Stern show since 2006 when he came to Sirius. That's when I started listening. I listen to other podcasts that are like,
Who do you listen to?
I don't know anything about cars.
Okay.
Okay. I can't change an oil. I can't change a tire. I listen to Car Talk podcasts.
I like that one.
One of those guys are dead. They're all in replays, but it's comforting to me because I like just to get away from it.
They're chill. I like those guys. What other podcasts do you like?
Let me look at my phone.
I mean,
the I Am Rappaport podcast.
Of course. Well, everybody. I mean, that goes
saying. Is your buddy, did he do the Arby's? Is like he the over?
No.
He sounds like the Arby's guy.
You know who I think that is? I think it's Ving Rhames. Bring in the beef. That's Ving Rhames.
Are you serious?
That's Ving Rhames. The actor Ving Rhames. G. Monetti, the 2015 podcast co-host here,
doesn't his voice sound like the Arby's guy? I thought like he was like a voiceover.
But now that I told you Ving Rhames, now you'll be like, oh, you could hear it's Ving Rhames. Like,
okay,
bring in the beef.
So I listen to Fresh Air.
Okay, yep.
You know, just like that. I listen to Bill Simmons' podcast.
But so, dude, that's not an escape from sports.
I know, but it doesn't always do NBA.
Yes.
When you said the line that Prince was the world-class coxman.
Stickman. World-class coxman. World-class stickman, for sure.
Is one of the... I was laughing so hard I had to pause it.
Well, it's a truth. It's a true statement. I mean, you know, he amongst being fantastic artist and all the other things, a world-class, world-renowned coxman, one of the greats of all time because of the longevity.
Right,
the span that he was laying that purple pipe down goes from when he first emerged...
Unfurling the purple loaf.
Yeah, he was unfolding the purple loaf for years.
So greatest.
A great coxman. And I felt like the mainstream media, you know, they mentioned Purple Rain. And
I
all these
certainly
greats.
Knew nothing about it.
No, and then all of a sudden it's like, what about the fact that this is a true stick man? A fantastic stick man. So what other podcast?
This American Life.
Yep.
The Mark Maron's podcast.
I like his too.
Nerdist.
Yep.
There's this one thing called The Mystery Show, which had like 6 episodes last year and they haven't brought it back.
Don't know that one.
Well, you wouldn't because it's been gone for a year.
Okay.
Like, it's very strange. Those are the things I, pretty much listen to.
Okay.
And, but really, my life is dominant. Like, it's a challenge for me every day to be able to get through the entire Howard Stern show because my day is very full.
Yes.
And it's like, well, I missed that one segment. I got to go back.
Yes.
Listen to that.
Oh, I'll be on there because fantasy's gearing up.
I know.
And they're sort of like, uh-oh, here he comes.
Because I know that nothing I will hear on that show will bring me to some place that is like work-related.
No.
That is a true escapism.
Yes.
When I listen to that show.
He's fantastic. And that's why I love doing it. It's total escapism. It's juvenile delinquent behavior of grown folks.
And like my wife, like I can't even let her listen to it for 5 seconds because she will just look at me like, what are you doing? You know, she judges me. For
yeah,
sure
no, I get
that
it.
I listen to it.
You know, sometimes the other day, whatever, enough with Howard. When you say, this is something I want to ask. When you say, my sources have told me, or sources have told me, who are you talking about? You don't have to give your sources, number one. Number two, do your sources have sources? Or number three, are you getting it directly from the source? I'm speaking generally. Are some people saying when they say, I have sources, are they just saying that to sort of instigate a rumor? When you guys say, as broadcasters, sources have told me, and Bruchard is my man. I think he brought sources to the mainstream. Because he's the first one, and I do a Chris Broussard. He's sources have told me that LeBron James has met with the Miami Heat. You know, and he was the first one that I remember being like, sources, sources, sources. Now it's sort of a cliche. But when you say sources, you don't have to name names, but who are they? Are they GMs? Are they people taping ankles? Like, where are you getting this from?
Well, in some cases, it is non-like official people, like maybe ankle tapers.
Okay, you know? Got you.
But those are rare.
I got you.
The lion's share of sources are executives,
mm-hmm.
owners,
mm-hmm.
and agents.
Now, will they say to you, like, let's just throw this out there. Let's just do retired players. Will an agent say to you, like, let's say the Knicks are trying to re-sign Patrick Ewing. Okay, and the Seattle Supersonics are like, you know, vying for him. Will they give you a tip because they know you'll bring it to ESPN to sort of play the middleman? And like, well, are they almost sort of using, can you guys be used in a way by those people?
Can we? That's the entire game. The game is mitigating how you're used so that you're not totally being used.
So you don't look like a chump.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to break news that's totally off the wall.
Right, and you want to, there's got to be a line, you know, that, you know, you just like, I'm not going to go there.
Or, right.
You know, or they pitch you something like, hey, how about this? You're just like, I can't do it, you know. But so it's an ongoing relationship. You're like today, just give me an example for today. So yesterday, Dwayne Wade signs with the Heat. So this morning, with the Bulls, this morning, I hear that there's a possibility that the Heat may look to trade Goran Dragic.
Right.
I don't know for sure if it's going to happen, but I start talking to executives. What do you think about this? Do you think they have to move him? Do you think you'd be interested in it? And not only just on the phone, which I do a lot, but also on text.
Right.
Like I may be having conversations with five executives at the same time on text. What do you think about this? Well, they got to do it. No, they're going to hold on to him. Oh, I heard this, whatever. But that's just, you know, just a conversation that isn't necessarily about a story that's going to be on air.
I got you.
But when it goes down, you got to rely on them. So like last night, for example, you know, the Wade stuff, you know, I had to reach people at the Bulls.
Right.
Is this going to happen? And sometimes they can tell you, and sometimes you send a text, and it just goes unanswered.
You know,
because they can't tell you.
Right.
And there's just confirmation and stuff like that. And, you know, this time of year, especially agents, you know, because the teams don't like to necessarily tell you how much their players are getting. Because that's the thing. They you know, you're not supposed to publicize that, but obviously we all get the numbers.
Right.
The agents, meanwhile, this is their work product.
Right.
So if they get, and they're like, yeah, I got them $470 million. And sometimes that can be manipulated. Like it's actually not 70, it's like 63 and they round it up or whatever. It's a 365 day a year process. You're constantly in contact with these people.
We can't do this podcast when we're talking about agents' money without bringing up Mike Conley. Mike Conley signed a contract for, is it $150 million or is it $130? And who the fuck is his agent? And can I get him to negotiate the deal? I'm trying to buy a house. I want whoever negotiated that deal in my life when I'm talking to American Airlines and I want ticket prices down, Verizon. Who got Mike Conley, who's a good player? Would you say he's a great player? Is he top 10 point guard?
I don't think he's ever made the All-Star game.
Right, he's a good player. He's respected.
Yeah. Not only that, he's 29 years old.
He's had injuries.
which is sort of the apex of a point guard's career.
Right.
Most likely his next 5 years, most likely, not for sure, will not be as good as his last five. His agent, by the way, is his father.
Triple jump gold medalist.
Right.
Mike Conley Sr.
That's right.
Man. And on paper, from what you know, what is his contract?
$153 million.
I want to smack your face for saying
fully guaranteed.
$153 million. Fully. What the fuck is the Memphis Grizzlies? Are they? That's insanity. You mean to tell me they couldn't pick up two other point guards to cover up what Mike Conley does? They're not winning a championship. $153 million. Mike Conley, God bless you. He's a classy guy. I followed your dad in the Olympics. I've always liked him. Oh, what, Ohio State?
Absolutely.
Yo, $153 million? Like, yo, isn't he, next year, isn't he making more than LeBron and Steph Curry combined next season?
No, but it's not. You're not way off.
Yo, what is...
He's making more than Klay Thompson and...
What is the rationale of $153 million for Klay, for Mike Conley? I don't understand how he... I get the KDs, I get the Klays, I get the Stephs, I get the mainstream dudes who are like, you know, either in their prime or going to be... $153 million? There's got to be resentment. What the fuck is $153 million? And I'm not knocking the player. I'm knocking the game. Like, I just don't understand, like, what Memphis... They're not winning a championship next year. There's no way they're winning a championship.
They also gave Chandler Parsons $94 million. And he has missed the last 2 years. Your face.
Yo, man.
So it's leverage. It's leverage. It's because Memphis can't get star players. They just can't get them to come there. And there was 20 teams that could have offered Mike Conley that money.
They would have. There's other places that would have offered him $153
million. They couldn't have got to 150. They could have got to like 115. The extra fifth year. So look, here's the thing. Like Al Horford, for example. Al Horford goes to Boston, right? And you're like, the Hawks. How can the Hawks let him go? Well, that's why. Because the Hawks, it was the same parameters. The Hawks said, we can't give Al Horford $150 million. We just can't do it. And Horford's been an all-star four times. And Horford's, I mean, they've had deep playoff runs. And
I like Al Horford.
And the Hawks were just like, we can't do it. We're like, we can give you $130 million. We can't give you $150 million. And Al Horford's like, all right, I'm out of here.
And then what did he get from Boston?
$113 million.
And it's a shorter period of time.
Four years, $113 million.
What is LeBron James getting next season?
Right now, if he wants. It depends on whether he wants to sign a contract for that long, because you could only take take 1 year contracts. He could get up to $192 million.
And for 1 year?
No.
Christ. Oh, you mean for how many years could he get?
Five for five.
Well, he's worth it. I mean,
but next year, let me just point something out.
Because he's doing one and dones, right?
He has been. But at some point you're gonna invest. You know, you're gonna say, I'm gonna be here. I don't know if he's gonna do that or not. Okay, so the highest paid player in NBA history was Michael Jordan in 1998.
Right.
He made $33 million.
Right. That's like dog shit compared to...
But it's not. Because nobody's made that money.
In 1 year?
The only two players have ever made over $30 million in one season.
KG?
KG never made it. He was close a bunch of times.
Okay.
Kobe made it 1 year.
Okay.
And so give me another profession. Now, I agree Michael Jordan was otherworldly. Find me another profession where the highest paid player in a profession 20 years ago, or the highest paid person, mm-hmm. is not 20 years later, is still not making as
much
money. The greatest thoracic surgeon in 1976, you know, by 1996, even an average, you know, surgeon was probably making more.
What is thoracic? What kind of surgery?
I think that's like a complex surgery. Orthopedic surgery.
Okay.
Like your boys in New York are going to need.
Yes.
By the gross.
Yes.
You know, my point is, for all this complaining about the NBA, economy, the top players have kind of been getting screwed.
Right. Okay.
Because the highest paid top player was 20 years ago. Now, granted, it was the greatest player of all time.
I got you.
So finally, next year, Michael's going to get knocked off his perch.
I got you.
Because LeBron or Durant are going to hit that $35 million
mark. Steph? Because isn't Steph getting like $7 million?
He's making $12 million.
This year. Coming up.
Next year, he'll probably hit $26
million. Okay. All right, be winners.
And I know you felt bad about him only making 12.
Well, I just think that,
13% taxes in California.
That's crazy.
But I can't believe what you guys pay out here.
It's terrible. But the Mike Conley thing is the craziest thing ever. That is the most wild. So what is, just to end this, I got to let you go. I got to go. What is Mike Conley making for the 2016-17 season that's coming up?
$30.8 million.
My goodness.
So he'll be the third. So here we have the $30 million men. Ready? Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Mike Conley.
Unbelievable. All right. B. Winhurst, I appreciate you doing the I Am Rapport Stereo podcast.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for just bringing me out to this incredible place. I'm taking photos. I'm walking around.
Of course. The studio that Charlie Chaplin built. It was a pleasure. I would love to have you back on again. Enjoy your summer.
Thank you.
I hope you can decompress from... I hope you could go 24 hours without hearing KD, DK, and any of this stuff. Because as much as I love it, even sometimes I can't deal with it. Although once it's brought up, it's like just pulling back a scab, and it's like I'm on a road. I don't even know how I got on the road.
I love that Conley thing. That was great to witness in person.
I don't know what that is. 153 million. I want to hang out with his pops. Because he's probably like, I didn't 4%, get paid shit.
4%.
He pays his father.
Well, I don't know what, you know, anybody could make an agreement, but the typical agreement's 4%.
These NBA players got it good. You know what the actors pay our agents
and
managers?
I know what I pay my agent. My agent gets 10%.
10% out here with their shit.
So you're paying 13% tax. By the way, I just can't believe the 13% tax.
13% taxes.
10% to your agent and manager. We're already cutting deep.
Ugh. And he's paying 4% to the NBA. So the athletes, because they're making so much money.
The way it is, 4%. Some of these guys negotiate down and say, well, 3%, 2%.
You know what somebody told me? He said, listen, you need to tell these people, if you don't kill it, you don't eat it. That's how it works. I know some of these players don't have agents because it's like, listen, it is what it is.
I mean, is Tom Cruise paying 10%?
I don't know what Tom Cruise is playing. I know that it depends on some of the actors. It varies. So I know some of them are like, yo, you listen. Especially when the show gets into syndication, you hear like these actors making, you know, $100 million for being on whatever sitcom. They tell them, say, yo, no, right. You're going to get this and you're going to get that. Right. Some of them are just like, I'm too loyal. It varies. I don't know what Tom Cruise is paying, but I know that the actors that I know that make big, big money, a lot of them have been with the same people. And at that point, you're making so much money. It's like, what, 10% is a good write-off. Yeah. It's like it's benefiting. I mean, you know, take 12 because it's a better write-off. I appreciate you doing
this.
The I Am Rapport Stereo Podcast coming live from Henson Studios with my man Brian Winhurst, and we're done.